Hello, and welcome to the reading of the Cedar Rapids Gazette for Friday, April 26th, 2024. I'm your reader, Grace Barter. An Iowa City man was arrested early Thursday after police say he stabbed a person multiple times the night before. Lonzo Bryant Powers, 55, faces a charge of willful injury causing serious injury, a Class C felony. Iowa City police were called to the area of Washington and Clinton Streets at 9:10 p.m. Wednesday for a report of a fight that ended in a stabbing. Officers found the victim, who had been stabbed multiple times, and was taken to a hospital. According to a news release from the Iowa City Police Department and a criminal complaint, the victim was not identified in the complaint or the release. Powers was arrested in connection to the stabbing. He was booked into the Johnson County Jail just after 1 a.m. Thursday. He had an initial appearance in court Thursday and was being held on a $10,000 bail. Two of the men charged in the kidnapping and killing of a 20-year-old Marion woman in February are waiving their right to a speedy trial. The trial date for Dakota Lyle Van Patten, 18, of Cedar Rapids, is set for August 26th in Linn County District Court. The trial for McKinley Louisma, 23, of Hiawatha, is tentatively set for November 4th. Previously, his trial had been set for May 28th. Both men are charged with first-degree murder, first-degree kidnapping, and conspiracy to commit a forcible felony. They are accused of kidnapping and killing Melody Hoffman, who died by strangulation, according to an Iowa State Medical Examiner's preliminary report. She also had numerous stab and slash wounds to her body and was bound with duct tape during the February 17th attack. During Louisma's pretrial hearing Thursday, 6th Judicial District Judge Chad Kepros had a lengthy discussion about possible trial dates, with defense attorneys and prosecutors having various conflicts. Linn County Attorney Nick Maybanks, during an interview in February, told the Gazette that Hoffman's mother, Megan Hoffman, reported her daughter missing early February 18th, saying she'd last seen her daughter the evening of February 17th when Melody said she was going out with friends. Maybanks confirmed Louisma had an on-again-off-again relationship with Melody. Louisma later told police he also had another girlfriend. Authorities found Hoffman's body February 18th near the Lily Pond at 220th Trail and 38th Avenue in Amana. Investigators from the Marion Police, the Linn and Iowa County Sheriff's Offices, and the Iowa Division of Criminal Investigation tracked activity on Hoffman's iPhone, which was synced to her Apple Watch. They determined she was picked up by Louisma and Van Patten in Louisma's vehicle around 11 p.m. February 17th, Maybanks said. Investigators learned the three ended up in Linn County's Morgan Creek Park, just west of Cedar Rapids, because Hoffman's Apple Watch recorded her heartbeat, which intensified, then stopped, either when she was killed or when the watch was deactivated. She was either killed at Morgan Creek Park or Lily Lake, but both counties could potentially have jurisdiction because key events took place in both counties, Meg Banks said during the interview. But key elements, if not all the elements of the kidnapping and murder, occurred in Linn County before Louisma and Van Patten traveled to Iowa County and left the body, he added. During a search of Louisma's car, which was found in Hiawatha, deputies found a bag in the car's trunk containing Hoffman's phone case, a white Apple Watch band with blood on it, towing rope, gloves, and clothing Hoffman had been wearing February 17th, according to the criminal complaint. Maybanks said Luisma came to the Marion Police Department after finding out his car had been towed there, and investigators interviewed him. Luisma told a DCI special agent that he and Van Patten bound Hoffman's wrists with duct tape while at Morgan Creek Park and placed her in the car trunk, according to the complaint. They then drove to several different places in Linn County before they went to the pond at Lily Lake, where they ripped off her clothes and left her. Luisma said Hoffman had been beaten while she was with him and Van Patten, and that she was begging to be let go. He didn't admit to doing the beating himself, Maybanks said. Investigators also confirmed through video surveillance that Luisma, Van Patten, and Logan William Michael Kimpton, 18, who also has been charged, were together at Walmart buying the two machetes and gloves before they picked up Hoffman that night, Maybanks said. Van Patten, during his interview with police, admitted he was with Luisma at Walmart before the killing, but didn't admit to being with Luisma during Hoffman's slaying. Video surveillance from a Quickstar store in Cedar Rapids showed Luisma and Van Patten buying cigars after Hoffman's body was left at Lily Lake, according to the complaint. When an investigator said to Kimpton during an interview that he had chickened out of participating in the killing, Kimpton replied, "Damn right I did," the complaint stated. Kimpton's trial is set for July 30th. The Iowa Court of Appeals on Wednesday upheld the first-degree murder conviction of an Iowa City man involved with two others in a fatal drug robbery in 2020. The court said there was substantial evidence to show first-degree robbery was committed by another person and that Reginald Little either aided and abetted or engaged in joint criminal conduct with that person. Little, then 46, and Duraje Rosa, then 24, both of Iowa City, planned to steal drugs and money from Kejuan Winters, 21, when the robbery ended in the fatal shooting of Winters on April 20th, 2020, in his apartment at 1960 Broadway Street in Iowa City. The appeals court found the trial judge didn't err in denying Little's motion for new trial. The judge considered the weight of the evidence and explained why the court found the testimony of the co-conspirators credible despite some inconsistencies in their testimony. Little was sentenced in January of 2022 to life in prison without the possibility of parole. During sentencing, he denied taking part in the robbery. According to trial testimony, drugs and revenge led to the murder of Winters. Little had previously purchased drugs from Winters, and Rosa was Winters' roommate. Both men knew Winters had a large supply of drugs. The men hadn't planned to kill Winters during the robbery, but a struggle ensued, and Winters was fatally shot while his two children and his girlfriend, Tashauna Gooden, were in their apartment. The children and girlfriend were not injured. Rosa pleaded guilty to lesser charges and was sentenced to up to 50 years in prison. He testified at Little's trial that he had a gun go missing and that he thought Winters knew who had taken it. Rosa said he was mad because Winters hadn't done anything about the missing gun, and that's when he hatched the robbery plan with Little. Patrick Bland, 34, of Rockford, Illinois, also convicted and sentenced to up to 60 years in prison, testified Little brought him into the robbery scheme. Police initially didn't know Bland was involved until they recovered surveillance camera footage. That footage and cell phone records also showed Little was in the area of the residence just before shots were fired, according to testimony. On the day of the robbery and shooting, Bland and Little were sitting in Little's car in the parking lot waiting for Winter's girlfriend to leave. Bland, who had a gun and was wearing a stocking mask, went inside to rob Winters of drugs and money, according to testimony. Gooden, Winters' girlfriend, came back and saw Winters struggling with a man but couldn't identify him because of the mask. Rosa pulled Gooden and the children into the bathroom before the shots were fired. Gooden testified she tried to get Rosa to help Winters, but he didn't. Police responded about 9:55 a.m. to the report of a shooting and found Winters with multiple gunshot wounds. He died inside the apartment. Local developer Steve Emerson is seeking state support for his $30 million mixed-use redevelopment of the Guaranty Bank and Strand Theater property that will transform the long-vacant historic property downtown. Emerson's request is among four others asking for workforce housing tax credits from the Iowa Economic Development Authority. The Cedar Rapids City Council approved these requests as part of its consent agenda Tuesday, where items considered routine are approved in a single vote with no discussion. In doing so, the council also awarded city financial incentives as a local match required to receive the state tax credits. Emerson's project at 222 3rd Street Southeast would add main floor commercial space and 70 market rate rentals on the 2nd through 6th floors. The project will retain the historical features and architecture of the building as required by the State Historical Preservation Office. There would be an advanced fitness center where the theater is on the northeast end and a salon spa where the bank is, Emerson said. The commercial space would house a clinic-type tenant and a convenience store. The city's local match incentive program provides a 10-year, 100% rebate of the increased taxes a project generates. City staff estimate the project would generate $1.15 million in taxes over 10 years, of which $714,000 would be rebated back to the company. Discussions with state historic preservation officials have progressed on preserving features such as the windows. Emerson said his team also discovered light wells, some of which let light filter in through multiple floors. The second floor, the ceiling of the first, is textured glass that will be restored. That allows light to come through as a great feature to the main floor. Pending city and state incentives for Guaranty, construction will start and take at least 18 months to 2 years, Emerson said. Crews worked in the winter to install geothermal tubing as a replacement for an inefficient steam boiler HVAC system and are now doing asbestos abatement, Emerson said. There has been some exploratory demolition to understand what's behind the walls, which will guide drawings to send to state and federal officials for historic preservation tax credits. When Emerson last year purchased the Guaranty Bank properties for $2.8 million, that also included the three-story brick building at 329 2nd Avenue Southeast, where the Dragon Restaurant, long Cedar Rapids' only Chinese restaurant, was located for 55 years. It most recently held the Hazard County Saloon until the business moved across the street in 2018. The 14,400-square-foot commercial building is slated to be transformed into 13 apartments on the second and third floors, 5 studio, 7 one-bedroom units, and 1 two-bedroom unit. The first-floor commercial space would be for fitness coaching. It wasn't awarded workforce housing tax credits in 2023, but Emerson is waiting on a city development agreement for local financial incentives. He does not plan to seek workforce housing tax credits for the building again this year. Otherwise, he said the project is ready to go and would take a year or less to complete after starting. The IEDA board last year awarded a Grayfield redevelopment tax credit worth up to $1.5 million for the Guarantee Bank block redevelopment. Grayfield sites are public buildings, industrial or commercial properties that have infrastructure in place, but the property is otherwise underused. Cedar Rapids last year was designated as a thriving community by the IEDA, giving it more points when developers here seek tax credits and improving odds Cedar Rapids projects will receive funding. Here are some other projects seeking state workforce housing tax credits. The Vesnice LLC, an entity of High Properties, is pursuing a $23 million project in the New Bohemia District to build 75 market-rate rental housing units and a 4,500-square-foot commercial space on the main floor. There also will be covered parking. The council last June approved High Properties as the developer and new owner of city-owned property at 116 16th Avenue Southeast, across the street from Quick Kickstand near the Cedar River Trail. The development, dubbed the Vesnice, which is Czech for village, also is planned to feature an elevated 12,054-square-foot garden terrace and a 2,000-square-foot roof terrace. The tax rebate would be on the increased taxes generated by the housing portion of the project. Staff estimate the project will generate $2.1 million in taxes over a 10-year period, of which $1.8 million would be rebated back to the company. An entity of Eric Gutschmidt D. Taggart Holdings is transforming a vacant block into Rainbow Road in the southwest quadrant as a symbol of LGBTQ inclusion in an area that's visible from Interstate 380. Gutschmidt's $4 million project will build 15 units on 920, 926, 930, and 940 M Street Southwest, as well as 1213 North Street Southwest. The previous homes were demolished, and the lots are currently vacant. Each parcel is made up of three units, one in a single-family house and two accessory dwelling units. The units also have three garage stalls and six total off-street parking spaces. The development agreement the council approved in November required the developer to apply for these tax credits in 2024 for any parcels where construction had not started within 30 days of the application deadline for tax credits. Gutschmidt has not started construction on any of the five parcels. The city will provide a reimbursement of 100% of the tax increments up to a net present value of $400,000. An entity led by Fred Timko and Gary Rozick, 4th Avenue Properties LLC, is pursuing a redevelopment project along 4th Avenue Southwest between 2nd Street Southwest and 3rd Street Southwest, 300 on 2nd, that would fill one of the few vacant spots left in Kingston Village to redevelop since the 2008 flood. The project would transform the space into a $4 million four-story residential building with first floor covered parking and walk-up units. There would be 29 market rate rental units, all one bedroom units. Renovation of a commercial building housing Kipro's physical therapy at 218 4th Avenue Southwest, which was part of the same development agreement as this residential space, is complete. KN Properties 15 LLC, an entity of Tyler Oswood, is planning a mixed-use redevelopment project at 611 2nd Avenue Southeast. The $3.5 million project would offer main floor retail and restaurant space, as well as 13 market-rate units on the upper level. Staff estimate the project would generate $159,000 in taxes over 10 years, of which $108,000 would be rebated back to the company. Iowa Republican U.S. Representative Ashley Hinson says Americans' interests in arming Ukraine are more clear to her now following a visit to the country earlier this month. President Joe Biden on Wednesday signed into law a $95 billion foreign aid measure that includes nearly $61 billion in aid to Ukraine, $26 billion for Israel, and $8 billion for the Indo-Pacific. Hinson voted for the foreign aid bill and has supported as well as opposed previous funding packages providing military assistance to Ukraine. She and Iowa GOP U.S. Senator Joni Ernst met with Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky earlier this month in Ukraine's northern Chernihiv Oblast. Hinson said the fact-finding mission helped solidify her support to get the foreign aid package across the finish line. The Marion Republican also met with the U.S. Brigadier General in charge of the 10,000 U.S. troops stationed in southern Poland. She said the delegation also met with anti-corruption officials in Ukraine to discuss increasing accountability. They also discussed the importance of maintaining the port in Odessa, Ukraine, due to its strategic importance for global food supply. Hinson also highlighted her efforts in Congress to provide funding for mental health resources, particularly for veterans, and support for HUD programs like block grants that support mental health services at the state level. Foundation 2 utilizes federal funding to support its mobile crisis outreach and emergency youth shelter, which provides housing and care for youths ages 11 to 17 experiencing homelessness or human trafficking, or have been placed in foster care, and to staff the 988 Suicide and Crisis Lifeline. Hinson said the visit Thursday validated the need for continued robust federal funding to meet increasing mental health and suicide prevention needs. No matter the weather or the occasion, Walls Lake trucker David Schultz always wore traditional cowboy boots. His brown Wrangler boots with blue on the soles was a factor, along with dental records, in identifying the 53-year-old's body after it was found Wednesday, lying face up in a field roughly a mile and a half from where his semi-tractor trailer loaded with hogs was discovered abandoned over 5 months ago. Thursday, the Iowa Division of Criminal Investigation positively identified the body as Schultz and partially answered one of the mysteries since he disappeared. Preliminary autopsy results show no signs of trauma or serious injury. Further autopsy test results are pending. The DCI said in a news release, authorities do not suspect foul play in the death of Schultz. However, the DCI did not say what led authorities to that conclusion or describe any medical issues that may have caused Schultz to park his loaded truck and leave it. Sarah Schultz said she has felt relief and sorrow since she learned her husband's body had been discovered by a farmer in his freshly tilled field. The farmer, who was not identified by authorities, found the body shortly before 2 p.m. Wednesday in the 1900 block of Union Avenue in Sac County, near the intersection where Schultz's truck was found abandoned. David Schultz, a married father of 10-year-old twin boys, vanished before last Thanksgiving. He was last heard from in the early morning hours of November 21, 2023, according to the Lakeview Police Department. From what she understands, Sarah Schultz said her husband's body was found clad in a T-shirt, which was pulled up. She said law enforcement didn't show her a photo of the cowboy boots, but she said they were the same brand her husband always wore. Jake Rowley of the nonprofit United Cajun Navy search team, who appeared at the Thursday morning news conference with Sarah Schultz, said the body was found inside a 2-mile radius that he had been told law enforcement had already searched. He said the United Cajun Navy, whose volunteers scoured more than 100,000 acres in and around Sac County looking for Schultz, didn't search that particular area. Sarah Schultz said she recalled a thermal imaging drone from the Iowa Department of Transportation flying over during the initial search. That original area was just marked green out of the gate because, from my understanding, it had been searched by professionals, said Rowley, who said that raises baffling questions about whether the body was there the entire time or not. Neither Sarah Schultz nor Rowley have viewed the body. She said she has trouble grasping how her husband's body wasn't just bones, given the length of time that has passed since his disappearance and the relatively mild winter in northwest Iowa. With questions about tenure, its value, and its threats still top of mind of some Republican lawmakers who continued in the recent legislative session to question Iowa's public universities about post-tenure review and faculty performance plans, the number of tenured and tenure-track faculty on the campuses is continuing a generational slide to its lowest in recent history. The total number of tenured faculty across the University of Iowa, Iowa State University, and University of Northern Iowa campuses dipped to 2,333 this academic year, lower than any point since at least the 1980s, according to a new Board of Regents report. At the same time, the Regents are reporting the most ever faculty resignations across its campuses at 186 in the 2023 budget year. That includes 93 across the three universities who either had tenure or were on a tenure track, according to Regent documents requested by the Gazette. The reports come as university leaders increasingly find themselves balancing the need to recruit and retain top faculty who often are tenured or on a tenure track, with rising concerns from Republican lawmakers such as Representative Taylor Collins, a Republican from Minneapolis, who earlier this year sought more information on the university's post-tenure review. Taylor was among backers of a proposal in the last session that, if passed, would have imposed new restrictions on the regents and universities, such as limiting their ability to raise tuition, curtailing diversity, equity, and inclusion efforts, and allowing university presidents to initiate post-tenure reviews of any faculty member at any time. Current UI policy requires annual and 5-year performance reviews of all tenured faculty. Iowa State also has annual reviews and post-tenure reviews at least every 7 years, and UNI does comprehensive post-tenure reviews every 6 years in addition to annual evaluations. Tenured faculty who fall short in these reviews can be placed on performance improvement plans, and lawmakers last year passed the campuses on how often faculty end up on those plans. you and I reported that in the 2021-22 academic year, 33 faculty were cited for needing improvement, including 9 each for teaching and for service, and another 15 for scholarship. All those faculty received no pay raise that year. Iowa State said 3 to 4 tenured faculty are placed on an improvement plan every year as a result of receiving an honest satisfactory rating through this process. And U of I reported 1 to 2 tenured faculty members are placed on improvement plans annually. Compared to this year's 2,333 total tenured faculty, a 1998 report indicated 2,949 of the total 6,538 faculty members that fall had tenure, and 788 were on a tenure track. A 2005 tenure report for Iowa's public universities said 2,728 of the 6,799 total faculty had tenure, with 911 on a tenure track. This academic year's 604 total tenure track faculty and 2,333 with tenure represents a 21% drop from 1998. And while all 3 campuses have seen tenure and tenure track numbers wane, UNI has some of the biggest drops, reporting 326 tenured faculty and 63 on a tenure track this year, down 28% from 450 tenured faculty a year ago. UNI's tenure track count has been cut nearly in half from 119 in the 2013-2014 academic year. Although UNI's tenure and tenure track decreases are commensurate with overall drops in total faculty from 801 a decade ago to 635 this year, which also align with enrollment losses over that period from 12,159 in the fall of 2013 to 9,000 in the fall of 23. The UI tenure and tenure track losses have come as its faculty total has increased from 3,064 in 2013 to 3,295 in the fall of 2023. Those UI faculty increases can be tied to jumps in its non-tenure track faculty, from 1,440 in fall of 2013, when that group accounted for 47% of the UI faculty, to 1,888 in the fall of 2023, now accounting for a majority, 57% of the faculty. All 3 of the public universities have seen non-tenure track employees swell over the years, but the UI has a much higher count in that category because of its clinical faculty who work in the UI hospitals and clinics and don't have tenure. You are listening to the reading of the Cedar Rapids Gazette for Friday, April 26th, 2024, on IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading Information Service for the Blind. Now, let's turn to today's obituaries. Carol Ann Bird Guerrero, 83, of Cedar Rapids, died Monday, April 22nd. A visitation will be held from 5:30 to 7:30 p.m. on Monday, April 29th, at Murdoch Linwood Funeral Home and Cremation Service in Cedar Rapids. A funeral service will take place at 1:30 p.m. on Tuesday, April 30th, at the funeral home. Burial will follow at Czech National Cemetery in Cedar Rapids. Carol was born May 12, 1940. She was in the first graduating class at Jefferson High School in 1958. Carol's professional journey included roles at college community schools and Quickway before her retirement. She cherished her role as a volunteer grandparent at local community schools. From Cedar Rapids, John F. O'Connor, 77, died Wednesday, April 24th. Murdoch and Linwood Funeral Home is in charge of arrangements. From Sigourney, Jeff Holm, 65, died Tuesday, April 23rd. Holm Funeral Home of Sigourney is in charge of arrangements. From Marshalltown, Donald Frank Polka, 97, passed away Wednesday, April 24th. Cruz Phillips Funeral Home in Tama, Toledo, is in charge of the arrangements. Chuck Gunderson passed away on April 20th. A celebration of life will be announced at a future time. Chuck was born on September 20th, 1937, in Grand Rapids, Michigan. He received his B.S. degree from LaSalle University. He enlisted in the Air Force, serving 4 years active duty and 6 years in the Air Force Reserves. He was employed by Lear Siegler Aerospace Division for 17 years. He then worked for E-Systems in Florida and eventually became general manager of Smith's Industries Aerospace Division in Clearwater, Florida. Upon leaving aerospace, Chuck and Gigi purchased Mermaid Marine Air, which they worked together for several years. Paul Eugene Ryan from Cedar Rapids passed into eternal life on April 20th. Paul was born in 1937 in Liberal, Kansas. He earned his PhD degree in physics from Kansas State University. He then taught as an assistant professor of physics at Emporia, Kansas State Teachers College. He later worked for Union Pacific Railroad Company in Omaha, Nebraska, managing the Research and Standards Laboratory. After finishing his railroad career at the General Motors EMD plant in Illinois, he retired in Cedar Rapids. Gladys Elizabeth Zack, 100, of Cedar Rapids, passed away on April 24th at Rest Ridge Care Center. Visitation will be 4 to 7 p.m. Sunday, April 28th at Brosh Chapel and the Ave Center in Cedar Rapids. Celebration of Life services will be 10:30 a.m. Monday, April 29th at Brosh Chapel and the Ave Center. The burial will be in Shoeyville Cemetery. Roger Leroy Flint, 91, died Sunday morning, April 21st. Roger was born on August 31st, 1932, in Dodge City, Kansas. He was raised in Pratt, Kansas. After graduation from high school, Roger enlisted in the Marine Corps from 1951 to 54, ultimately attaining the rank of Staff Sergeant and spending time in Korea. After his military discharge, Roger attended Kansas State University, earning his degree in electrical engineering. After graduation, Roger moved to Cedar Rapids, Iowa, and started working for Collins Radio. It was there he met a sweet young schoolteacher named Barbara K. Wallace, and they married on Valentine's Day of 1960. Roger spent his entire career of 33 years working for various evolutions of Rockwell Collins Radio. He started working with communication radios, then on autopilot systems, and finally on early GPS systems. He finished his career with a 2-year transfer to Australia, where he oversaw work on software development and helicopter simulators. Roger retired after returning from Australia in 1990. He was a member of Thursday Noon Optimists Club, First United Methodist Church, and Linn County Trails Association. He enjoyed woodworking and bicycling. A celebration of life will be held at the Marion Methodist Church at 11 a.m. on July 20th. In lieu of flowers, memorial contributions may be made in the name of Roger Flint to the Cottage Grove Place Foundation, the Greatest Needs Fund. Julius Jules Yoder, 94, passed away on April 19th at Mill Pond Nursing Home in Ankeny from natural causes. Jules served in the Air Force during the Berlin airlift, working as a ham radio operator and communications equipment repair specialist. Stationed in Frankfurt, Germany, he met his lifelong wife, Hannelore. Upon their return to New York, Jules received his B.S. from the Polytechnic Institute of New York City in electrical engineering and moved his family to Marion. His career with Collins Radio spanned over 30 years, where he designed, developed, and tested cockpit instrumentation for various commercial and military airplanes. There will be a celebration of life mass at St. Patrick's Church in Cedar Rapids on Monday, April 29th at 10 a.m., followed by his funeral interment at Cedar Memorial Park Cemetery with military honors. The family will host a visitation at Cedar Memorial on Sunday, April 28th from 2 to 4. Flowers may be sent to Cedar Memorial Park Funeral Home in Cedar Rapids. Michael James Christensen, 71, of Brooklyn, formerly of Cedar Rapids, passed away Sunday, April 21st at his home. A visitation will be held from 10 to 11:30 on Monday, April 29th at Murdoch Linwood Funeral Home and Cremation Service in Cedar Rapids. The funeral service will immediately follow the visitation at 11:30 a.m. at the funeral home. Michael was born August 31, 1952 in Cedar Rapids. He dedicated his life to education and retired as a professor of computer science from Black Hawk Community College. Michael enjoyed cooking, video games, learning Spanish, and spending time in nature, especially bird watching. Memorial donations may be directed to Holden Comprehensive Cancer Center at the University of Iowa's hospitals and clinics. Evelyn M. Owens, 88, of Cedar Rapids, passed away Monday, April 22nd at St. Luke's Hospital, Cedar Rapids. The family will host a celebration of life from 4 to 6 p.m. on May 4th at Cherry Hill Park Pavilion, Cedar Rapids. Murdoch Lynn Funeral Home is in charge. Evelyn was born November 18, 1935, in Shelsburg. She graduated from Washington High School in Vinton. On March 23, 1957, Evelyn was united in marriage to Robert Dean Owens. She worked as an agent at Davis, Jones, and Lamb Insurance Agency. And in an obituary of national notoriety, actor Terry Carter, who starred in TV's original Battlestar Galactica and McCloud and the film Foxy Brown, has died. Carter died peacefully at his home in New York City on Tuesday, his website announced. No cause of death was revealed. He was 95. The website paid tribute to Carter and his trailblazing career, remembering him as one of the first black actors as a regular on a TV sitcom series. The Brooklyn-born star, who began his decades-long career amid the civil rights movement, first gained TV notoriety for his time on The Phil Silvers Show from 1955 to 1959. For more than 90 episodes, Carter starred as Private Shuggy Sugarman, opposite Silver Sergeant Ernie Bilko. Despite a four-year tenure on the CBS sitcom, Carter's next major television role did not arrive until NBC's police drama McCloud hit the air in 1970. Carter starred as Sergeant Joe Broadhurst, opposite Dennis Weaver's daring Sam McCloud. Adding to his network TV spotlight, Carter most notably originated the role of Colonel Saw Tigg in the original Battlestar Galactica series, which ran from 1978 to 79 on ABC. As Tigg, a straightforward executive officer who helped the Galactus operations run smoothly, Carter appeared alongside Richard Hatch, Dirk Benedict, and Lorne Greene, among others. From the sports sidelines, Farm a Garden, headed to Ireland in 2025. Iowa State will play its first football game outside of the U.S. when it opens the 2025 season against Kansas State in the Aer Lingus College Football Classic in Dublin, Ireland. The game is set for August 23, 2025 at Aviva Stadium. The Cyclones and Wildcats will meet for the 108th time on November 30th in Ames to close the 2024 regular season. Both teams will then play on week zero of the 2025 campaign with the sixth college football game ever played at Dublin's 48,000-seat Aviva Stadium, the first in Ireland to feature Big 12 institutions and the first meeting between the longtime rivals in a season opener. The Iowa State men's basketball team will host Marquette in the 2024 Big 12 Big East battle on December 4th at Hilton Coliseum. Iowa State is 4-0 in the Big East Big 12 battle, beating DePaul last season, St. John's in 2022, Creighton in 2021, and Seton Hall in 2019. The Cyclones and Golden Eagles will be meeting for the ninth time. Iowa State won the last meeting at Hilton Coliseum in 2004. The Missouri Valley Conference announced Thursday it is moving its women's basketball championship to a rotation that will include Extreme Arena in Coralville in 2026. Over the next 3 years, the tournament will rotate between three venues: Ford Center in Evansville, Indiana in 2025, Extreme Arena in Coralville in 2026, and its current home, the Vibrant Arena at The Mark in Moline, Illinois. The Northern Athletics Collegiate Conference, NACC, a Council of Chief Executive Officers announced Cornell College, the University of Dubuque, and Lake Forest College will have been accepted as affiliate members beginning with the 24-25 academic year. Cornell and Lake Forest will join the NACC in men's and women's lacrosse, while Dubuque will participate in men's lacrosse only. All three institutions currently compete in the Midwest Lacrosse Conference. In the weather report, thunderstorms, some of which could bring hail and strong winds, are projected to sweep across eastern Iowa from today through the weekend, and meteorologists are warning total rainfall in some areas could top 2 inches. After a sunny day Thursday, the weather pattern will become unsettled today through Sunday, according to a Thursday morning briefing from the National Weather Service in Quad Cities Bureau. Scattered thunderstorms are possible mid to late afternoon today as a warm front pushes moist air across the state. This evening brings a low risk for severe thunderstorms in eastern Iowa and northern Missouri. Large hail and strong wind are the main threats. Thunderstorms are expected through the weekend, with multiple rounds developing Saturday. In particular, heavy rainfall is expected later Saturday and into Sunday, the Weather Service reports. While meteorologists have said total rainfall amounts are uncertain, they warn that some places along and west of the Mississippi River could see up to 3 inches of rain. There's an increased risk of flooding for some locations, and rises will occur on area rivers, according to the Weather Service. There is a 60% probability that eastern Iowa will see 2 or more inches of rain, the Weather Service said. Cities in that area include Cedar Rapids, Iowa City, Dubuque, Washington, the Quad Cities, and Burlington. Repairs to a faulty National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration weather radio transmitter were ongoing Thursday, and the National Weather Service in the Quad Cities Bureau was hopeful the fix would be completed Thursday ahead of thunderstorms and possibly severe weather today through the weekend. The transmitter, which sends alerts to weather radios in Linn County, stopped working April 13th, but had been experiencing intermittent problems since March. Replacement parts were on back order and initially were not expected to arrive before May, meteorologist Ed Holicky told the Gazette last week. Those parts, including cables and a new antenna, arrived this week, and repairs began on Wednesday. The outage is being used to remind Iowans to get their weather information from multiple sources, so communication disruptions don't interrupt the flow of information. TV and radio stations, as well as Alert Iowa, an online system that sends text, email, and call alerts, are additional ways to get weather information. And if you're looking for something to do today, meet Molly Davis, Gabby Marshall, Hannah Stolke, Sharon Goodman, Sydney Offalter, Kylie Fauerbach, Addie O'Grady, Taylor McCabe, A.J. Ettinger, J.D. Gumphy, and Kenise Johnson of the Iowa Hawkeye women's basketball team. Due to the high event interest, no autographs will be offered, but photographs are welcome. It's from 6 to 8 p.m. at the Riverside Casino and Golf Resort, and it's free. The Big 5-0 is a hilarious, sometimes touching account of a man coming to terms with his age, relationship with his son, and the future. It's tonight at 7:30 p.m. at the Starlighters Theater in Anamosa. The cost will be $5 to $16. Based in Cedar Rapids, members of the music group Vibe have been playing together in various projects for the last 10 years. Come vibe with them as they play classic songs reimagined. It's tonight at 7:30 p.m. at the Opus Concert Cafe, 119 3rd Avenue Southeast in Cedar Rapids. The cost is $17. And if you want to hear a stand-up comedian, Tom Garland will be filming his live comedy special. It's open to those 21 years of age and older. It's tonight from 8 to 9:30 p.m. at the CSPS Hall, 1103 3rd Street Southeast in Cedar Rapids. And there's something for everyone at the Iowa City Area HBA Home and Garden Show, running from April 26th through 28th at the Johnson County Fairgrounds in Iowa City. And you can receive a free entry voucher when you mention the Home and Garden Show with your local donation to a food pantry. The donations must be taken to the North Liberty Community Pantry, Iowa City Food Bank, or Coralville Community Food Pantry by April 27th. One voucher per person. The show runs Friday, 4 to 8 p.m., Saturday, 10 a.m. through 5 p.m., and Sunday from noon to 4 p.m. Tickets, kids 17 and under free, $5 is good all 3 days. It's more than a home show. Meet local vendors, interactive kid zone, ask the experts, and register to win hourly prizes on Sunday. And John Lewis was instrumental in bringing baseball to Kirkwood's campus before his 32-year tenure as the Eagles' head coach that began in 1980 and another as an assistant. The program played home games at Jones Park and Cedar Rapids Prairie. Lewis stood on the grass behind home plate, recalling when Kirkwood broke ground on its own facility. In the fall of 1993, we laid this sod, Lewis told a large crowd in the bleachers and standing around the backstop. I'm actually standing on sod that I laid. Lewis set the groundwork for the Eagles baseball program, literally and figuratively. The school honored Lewis, dedicating the field in his name Wednesday between games of a doubleheader against Southeastern Community College. A banner was removed from the scoreboard beyond the left field wall, displaying Lewis Field in uppercase white letters. That first team in 1994 on this field, the first hitter was my son Darren. He played center field. Guess who's playing center field now? His son, John Lewis said. Darren was the first hitter, had the first walk, stole the first base, and scored the first run. That means something that he was involved with that. Lewis's grandson, Bronx, added to the festivities, belting his first home run on the field officially named for his grandfather. He thought about how he would celebrate if he did hit one out, but he forgot all about that when he made contact. Bronx took off, running immediately, jumping up on the base paths when he realized what happened. The moment couldn't have been scripted better. And that does it for today's reading of the Cedar Rapids Gazette for Friday, April 26th, 2024. I'm your reader, Grace Barter. You can access a recording of today's reading on our website, iowaradioreading.org, anytime. Thanks for listening.